everybody. My name is Dr. Jamar Tisby, and I'll let my co-host, I guess, introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Nancy Wong Yoon, but we're just going to call each other Jamar and Nancy today.
There we go.
Okay, well, here we are, back again. We're going to talk about Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings,
Rings of Power, yes, the Amazon series. As we record this, only the first three episodes have come out, so it's still in process, in progress. If you don't know much about the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, I'll start, you add in whatever I miss, because there's a lot here.
Yes.
So first of all, based on the J.R.R. Tolkien books, which were then optioned into movies, you had the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Then you also had a sort of prequel, which is the Hobbits trilogy, which led into that one. Although the Lord of the Rings series came out first, then the Hobbits came out. Now this one is coming out, Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, as like a super prequel, because it happens like thousands of years before these other stories.
Hobbits don't even exist yet.
That's how long ago it is. We'll talk about the Harfoots a little bit. So this is telling the story of how the Rings of Power came to be, and in particular, the One Ring to rule them all, which is what the Lord of the Rings series is about. So it takes place thousands of years prior to the movies or the books that everyone, that a lot of people are familiar with. And what's also unique about this is that it's not a theatrical release. This is a series on Amazon Prime Video.
The most expensive ever, billion.
Yeah, $1 billion. Yeah. I think they've contracted out for 5 seasons. So over the course of that, it's going to be well over $1 billion, and by far the most expensive series to date. So what's fascinating about the series, some characters are familiar, some characters are brand new. So one of the main characters, Galadriel, is an immortal elf. She appears in the Lord of the Rings series, but here we get her younger self, you know.
And more warrior self, really, compared to the kind of ethereal, well, she's still ethereal, the Cate Blanchett version didn't seem as warrior-esque.
That's right. She had gained some wisdom with her millennia of life.
Or perhaps we are reimagining women as possible soldiers now.
very good point. There's also Elrond, who's a younger version of himself, who appears in the Lord of the Rings series. So anyway, they're telling the story. This is supposed to take place in the second age of Middle Earth. The first age was this chaotic battle and good against evil. The second age is supposed to be this time of relative peace. But what's happening is there's a growing evil. Not everyone knows about it yet, but you see signs of it. Villages decimated, Galadriel on the hunt, all of these things. And they're building up. There's going to be a multi-season buildup, apparently, but they're building up to, oh, the evil's back and it's taking on a new form. So right now in the first three episodes, we're kind of getting acquainted with the characters and the multiple storylines. Did I miss anything?
It's a lot. I think the one thing that we will be talking about is the kind of controversy that apparently it's got too many people of color, but we think perhaps differently than the people that have been attacking the show. And I think I shared with you when we first talked about doing this talk about Lord of the Rings, is that the three Peter Jackson movies, the only characters of color were played orcs. Most of them were indigenous, you know, Australian, the Maori actors, and none of the other leads, none of the good guys, none of the even like, you know, guys that weren't evil were portrayed by any people of color.
Right.
So, so it's very, very, it was like, you know, comparing to a representation that was zero to only bad, which is, you know, the kind of worst fears for people of color that were either invisible or were evil, and both were happening in those movies. And then also that, you know, this is very canonical, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. I think most of us grew up reading The Hobbit. It's like assigned to U.S. School children, and also very early on, I think maybe middle school.
So
very formational, right? And a lot of us, maybe we read it and then we saw some sort of movie. So whether it was, I think there was maybe an animated cartoon.
Yes, there was.
Yeah, and then the Peter Jackson movies, all white, right? So we're thinking that Middle Earth is white. Elves are white. Hobbits are white. You know, maybe even monsters. I mean, they were, everybody was white.
They probably have a British accent if they're a monster.
British, yeah, British accent. So white, not just like not US white, but like colonizer. Colonizer imperialist white. So that is kind of the reasons why I think partly why people feel so very strongly that this should be white, because they were middle schoolers when they were first exposed, or maybe even younger if they had, you know, if they were already born when the Peter Jackson kind of epic, right? That was like, I think there were no other movies. Really, everybody was just waiting for Lord of the Rings, right? Because they were fantastic. They were so amazing. Like the music, the many, many characters, the
cinematography,
special effects, everything was beautiful, perfect, and epic, and feeling like, I think, there hadn't been any fantasy movies that were like it prior. And then even since then, I feel like, you know, people are trying to throw things and try to make things happen.
Yeah.
And so I think this is Amazon's attempt.
Right. So, and I think you're bringing up such a great point about number one, why the movies were so successful. They were built off of these books that hold a special place in sort of one's nostalgic memory. I personally didn't grow up reading Lord of the Rings books. I got more exposure, interestingly, as I got to know more white Christians. Like, it was their thing. Because, like, Tolkien is apparently a person of faith, or was, and there's all these sort of religious themes and spiritual elements woven throughout. And I think it was seen in sort of conservative white Christian contexts as, oh, almost like a C.S. Lewis kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fantasy, but there's religious themes, so it's okay. Not like a Harry Potter or something.
Book burning.
Right, exactly.
This wizard's okay, but not the wizards in Harry Potter.
Isn't that interesting?
Because that wizard is, I don't know.
I know.
I'm not sure what the difference is.
That's another episode. We need to delve into that. So I didn't grow up with it, but I understand the sort of nostalgia. Like, this was, you know, we read the books in our formative years. We talked about them, and we have this picture, this image cemented in our minds. And then you have the movies that literally visualize the characters. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the only characters of color were, if they were there at all, they were cast as evil characters. And then, of course, all the other characters, white. And now comes along a series that attempts to pay attention to that, which, as we'll talk about, you know, they didn't great with it at all. But so tell us about the response on the racial piece that you saw.
Oh, gosh, it's like it comes across my feed, and I don't even want to read it because I don't want to know all the haters. Right. And
so enjoy it. Yes.
Before I think the series even premiered, there was all this hate because they knew just from the trailer that there was going to be a black elf.
Singular. The black elf.
And he is I want to make sure I get the name right. His name is Arondir.
Yes.
Arondir. And he is portrayed by a Puerto Rican actor named Ismael Cruz Cordova. And so apologies if I didn't get that right. But Arondir is probably the one lead. So far, he's been in all the episodes.
Yes.
Right. There are other characters of color, but they're not necessarily appearing in every single episode. Right. But Arondir, we follow his story very closely, just as we follow Galadriel, she's kind of like doing the whatever leader stuff that she's doing, the what is she? Some sort of general or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then he's kind of like the foot soldier, right? Also, like, I mean, getting into trouble and not, but because he wants to do good. Both of them, I think, are bound by they want to do good.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And they have people they care about. I think that those are things that actually when I did my research of people of color representation in Hollywood and TV specifically, it's the leads that have the relationships. That's how you can kind of tell. Because even if it's an ensemble, if the person doesn't have any relationships, that means that they're pretty much kind of an outside character.
Like a friendship or a romantic relationship.
Either, well, the best is if you have family, romantic, and friends.
Okay.
Right? That's kind of like, then you're fully human.
Yeah.
Because we all kind of do have those things,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But you don't always see that represented, right? Mm. If we think about even like who's a character of color that is on there that has appeared but doesn't necessarily have all of those?
Yes. So in the dwarven world, there is Prince Durin's wife, Princess Disa.
Yes, yes. So she, we can see that she is, I mean, she's introduced kind of as the wife of, right? Mm-hmm. Even I think the talk is like, how did we meet in the mines,
yes,
right?
Yes, because it's Elrond and it's Prince Durin. That's the focus.
That's right. That's right.
And then they literally sit down to dinner.
Yeah, and she like, no, you should come and stay for dinner. This is a very, I am the wife, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think even in that scene, I realized she was a princess.
It's not abundantly clear.
No.
I think she's introduced as a prince.
Not at all. Yeah.
Because the prince was mad that Elrond missed their wedding.
Yes.
And it wasn't like, this is a princess.
It's not like, I love this woman. It's more like, where were you at her wedding? And she's like, no, let's forgive him. So it was really about Elrond, really.
Right. Now she does a phenomenal job.
But, she's amazing.
Yeah.
No, she's definitely, she stands out on screen. Like, you know, this is actors of color have to do amazing things with what little they're given.
That's right.
Right. And maybe she'll be amazing later on. I mean, even her photo actually on the site is much more regal than how she appeared in that scene. Mm-hmm. But it was just that one scene.
Right.
But I thought she was, well, it's like every time a person of color comes on the screen, I'm like, there's one.
You can still pick them out.
Yeah. So it's not like, oh my gosh, all of Middle Earth is now brown. Nothing so like that.
What stuck out to me from the very first scene of the very first episode, it showed elven children in this sort of idyllic paradise. It was all green and hilly and sunny. To me, it reminded me of like a Garden of Eden kind of place where everything's
absolutely
perfect. Then you have this sort of like almost a Cain and Abel type of situation. So somebody does something, you know, selfish, whatever. But what jumped out at me in that scene was all of the children were white and blonde. And the reason that stuck out to me wasn't just the homogeneity of it all, but again, in that setting, it's sort of set up as a time when everything was right, when it was all okay. And guess who's there? And guess who's not there? And when things go bad, now we start to see some other diversity and variety of people in there. So that was the first thing. So it really was confusing to
me. That messaging is dangerous, right?
Very much so. Oh, and then you were talking about, so the elves can sort of choose to kind of go off into eternity. That is this utopia.
That
right?
was maybe the first or second episode,
yes.
Right? Where she's like, where Galadriel is encouraged as her reward essentially to kind of take a boat into heaven.
Yeah, escape all this, get out of here.
Yeah.
And who's on that boat? Just
a bunch of white elves. I would say 90% blonde.
Yeah.
Maybe I saw one elf with brown hair. That was the diversity. One white elf with brown hair.
And so at these bookends of like this, you know, Garden of Eden idyllic beginning and then this sort of idyllic eternity, who's there? It's still the white elves, which, by the way, gets into the black elf. He's obviously got a name. We're going to call him Erendir, right? Mr. Ismail, thank you so much for your great job. But he's portrayed as a sylvan elf, a woodland elf. He's not at like sort of the mainland of elvish society where Galadriel comes from, who's sort of like royalty, kind of she's commander of the northern armies. They call her the Lady of Lorien, right? So it's almost like where she's from is where the high elves are from. And then we have this, the one elf of color is a woods elf.
I don't know what the difference is.
You know, they're not seen at, I mean, they're just different. They're supposed to just be different in terms of where they live, what their skills are, whatnot. Their
but definitely there's a rank difference.
There's a hierarchy.
Huge,
yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. So all of that stood out to me. But in the meantime, there's like all these people freaking out because, Lord of the Rings has gone woke. It was such a dissonance to me. Like, are you serious? Are you seeing what we're seeing?
Yep.
I don't know what, I mean, what are some of the other sort of racial dynamics that stuck out to you from the first three episodes?
Oh gosh. So I was looking for the Asian whatever, somebody, right? And I think the only regular Asian character is this character named Theo. Mm. He is, and decided to look up. he looked brown to me, and I looked up, he's part Indonesian. And I think he's like gonna be evil.
Certainly appears he's on that trajectory.
Like Sauron's eye thing, magic. I mean, it's just like, I feel like, oh, great. You know, at first when I didn't know he was Asian, I was like, oh, the only brown kid is gonna be the future incarnation of evil.
Right.
And then you find out that he's part Asian. I'm like, oh, this is, how is this different from the Peter Jackson, you know,
Orcs,
all yeah. the brown people are evil. Yeah. I mean, we have Arondir, who is obviously good, and we know he's going to be good because, you know, his character is built out that way. But then where are, you know, I think there is his Theo's mother, yes. who is also, she's played by an Iranian actor. Her name's Bronwyn, and she seems to be good, mm-hmm. right? But she is definitely this like, oh, love interest, right? Right, and mother, right, like right. women are always this kind of like relational character, right? And I think women of color in this case, I mean, I guess Galadriel, I think, is very, I mean, she had a brother, but really right. she is obviously the lead, right. which I think, I have to say, that is progressive, because the Lord of the Rings series, all the elven women were definitely playing this like right. love interest, or this kind of like amorphous wise, you know, being that just gives some advice, right?
Exactly.
So Kate Blanchett Galadriel has come a long way in this retelling,
sure.
or prequel reimagining. And so, but how blonde is she? It's like, you know, like, it's like we can only progress this way, but she still has to be as Aryan looking as possible, mm. right? Mm. And then she has this, like, in the third episode, spoiler if you haven't seen it, she has this kind of love interest who is a white dude who is just like, who's, you know, obviously who's like a king but doesn't want to be a king. I was like, is this like the same storyline from like Lord of the Rings? Didn't we already see
yeah,
this character?
Exactly.
And he was in love with an elf woman yes. who was played by Liv Tyler. I'm like, yeah. dude, you know, you're going to spend $1 billion, but you're going to tell the same story. And then with white characters, once again, where the central love story is going to be between two white folks, interspecies, but both white.
Yeah, yeah.
We cannot go that far, you know, although Bronwyn and I guess Bronwyn and Arondir, that love story is interesting.
So that was what I was going to talk about next, is it was so interesting to me that you have a black male elf character moving towards an interracial, interspecies relationship with, she is a woman of color. She's lighter skinned. Like, these are just all the dynamics I'm noticing. Now you've got a black man with a lighter skinned woman. You add the species part in there as well. I'm like, how interesting that you could only have, at least at this point in the series, one black elf who is interested. I mean, the main relationship in his storyline is with a woman who's different, right? It's, I mean, it's fine, but it's just interesting. Like,
it's very common in Hollywood.
Right.
I feel like if there's going to be any kind of romantic relationship that involves one person of color, the other person cannot be the same ethnicity.
Yes.
Because it's kind of like there was a Master of None episode where Aziz Ansari says, you know, if you have one Indian on TV, it's fine. But if you have two, then it's international. right?
Yes.
So if you have two black, you know, a black couple, then it's like a black show, right?
Right.
Or, you know, or two Asians, then it's like they can't. I mean, sometimes it's possible, right? It's I'm not saying it never happens, but in, I think, the quest of Hollywood to diversify, it's like they want to have, it's still tokenized, right? You have one. Right, right, one. And right. if they appear, they cannot be with another one. We got to throw in another ethnicity
yes.
in there.
Yes.
So then we can say we're really diverse, right? But as we see with Lord of the Rings, they have many, many white characters, though,
in
right?
all kinds of roles.
Yeah,
yes.
lots. So uh-huh. lots of whites doesn't make it. Yeah, I mean, it does make it a white show.
It's never consciously.
No, right. Because a white show is not problematic in Hollywood right. because that has been normalized and the default, right? No one, I mean, there has been, I think, we've been talking in the last episode, we talked about Oscar So White, right? So there has been from the ground up, there are people of color saying, we're really tired, you know, of just having all white representation. Yeah. We want to see ourselves represented because we're like, you know, we're approaching 40% of the population, right?
Come on, somebody.
You know, and like in about 30 years, we're supposed to become the majority.
Right.
And so Hollywood has not caught up to that. It's trying a little bit. And and now we're talking about the kind of clumsy moves towards that.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we're glad to see any progress, right?
Yes.
These are ways I think that there's nuance to it, because as I'm looking at the writing room, the producers, it's a lot of the sort of same folks again who are white men in many cases, right? Which doesn't, simply by you being in a demographic, doesn't mean you can't write good stories with characters of color, but it does mean that you're gonna have to work harder. And in my experience, what I've seen is that even in their social networks, like this is where the real world impacts what we see on the screen. If your real world network is not highly diverse, right? And sociologists like you tell us, it's not just having that one Black friend. You actually have to have a network of people who are different from you in lots of different ways in order for that to really affect your worldview and how you say, write or create a show. If that's not happening, and if the people who are essentially at the top in terms of producing and writing the show are still that same cast of characters, we're going to get this, which, you know.
Yes. I mean, it's, I tweeted that I really am enjoying the show.
Absolutely.
But, and I mean, and it's such refreshing kind of representation compared to Peter Jackson. Right. Or, I mean, I don't mean him in particular, but his vision, right, was very, very white. And so, but I think that, you know, like what you said about social networks, like Pew Research Center shows that white folks have very few, very, very few people of color in their social networks, right? And so the hiring, so I've argued in my book that, so then the hiring networks, especially because exactly. In creative industries, it's all about who you know, right? It isn't kind of like just free for all, like we're going to, you know, have a wide search for writers in the room. It's a lot of times they're populated by people you've worked with before and the people that you bring into the industry. And if you only know white folks, that's why actually writers are probably one of the least diverse groups in Hollywood. And of course, the higher you get in terms of studio executives, it gets, you know, less and less like underrepresented people of color.
Right.
And so I think but the beauty of a television show, though, so usually with films, you have a script, you know, one or two screenwriters for the script, right? And sometimes they bring in people to rewrite, but it's not that many people, a handful of people, but mostly just one or two. With writers, with TV shows, you have a writer's room.
Yeah.
So even if the showrunners are white men, they can certainly populate their writers' rooms
absolutely.
With people of color to write for. So let's have a Puerto Rican writer, right, for Arandir, because he's played by an Afro-Latino actor, right? Let's bring that very unique, I mean, I don't know how you can do it in the Lord of the Rings,
but
I think you can. You can get creative. I mean, it's all imagination anyway, right? Let's bring in, like, you know, the fact that he, you know, comes from maybe whatever a part of Elven world that has, you know, colonization. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, you can you never know what recipe you can come up with unless you have the right people in the kitchen. So, I mean, part of it is we don't know. We don't know what would come of it, but let's get them in the writer's room. And I actually don't know the composition in this particular case of the writers, but I also think there's an advantage to having a series that's already picked up for multiple seasons because it can evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they're doing the first three episodes of season one is not the way they need to do season two or three, or even the last few episodes of season one. So I'm wondering if there might be some really robust expansion of not just the number of characters. We're not just talking about that. We're talking about the complexity of the characters, what opportunities they're given on screen. So I really do think, you know, these could be the first steps to what could end up being a really brisk pace setting kind of a series for representation on screen. I mean, that's my hope.
Yes. And because, and that's the kind of, again, the beauty of social media, and also like the fact that studios can hear from us directly. And yes, five seasons. I mean, how about by the fifth season, let's see Arondir in the same ranks as Galadriel. They better cross paths. That's what I'm saying, you know?
No doubt.
They better cross paths. And maybe there could even be a romance. I don't know. It doesn't have to be that. No. Let's get another brown elf in there, another right? Or perhaps, you know, Bronwyn. I'm totally fine with this kind of interspecies explorations as well, yes. Because I think it can be a metaphor for, you know, interracial, right. The kind of anti-miscegenation laws, right, that this country has had. And so all those things can be explored through this. And, you know, I think, and of course, it's like, how is he going to navigate having maybe a stepson who is the very thing that they're trying to fight? I have no idea, right, how that's going to be happening. But I think that the growth potential, though, what you said,
yes,
is absolutely there. And I think that's why everyone should share this video or talk about it yourself, right? Talk about how we want to see Arondir, you know, kind of expand, you know, and have an arc over the years. I want to see him go up in the ranks, because he's doing some brave stuff right now. He just, like this last episode, he really tried to save the entire elven slave component.
Yeah, he was doing his Harriet Tubman thing. out, boy. And then he sacrificed himself to stay in prison. And
I didn't even make it. I'm so heartbreaking. But I love it, because it's like showing that the odds are really stacked against him. Exactly. And the orcs are formidable. They're formidable once again.
And the evil is growing. So we're I feel like we should say this, because folks always take it the wrong way. We're coming at this as people who appreciate the series. Like I said in my initial remarks, the challenge with a series like The Rings of Power is to capture that big screen epic feel, and not even just the screen, because it's coming from a book. So you've got so much canonical material to honor, but you've also got the reputation and success of the books and the movies to try to recapture in some ways. Now you're doing it on the small screen and through multiple series, multiple episodes and seasons. What I said from the jump is they did that within the first few seconds, right?
Yes, just so good.
Sweeping landscapes, beautiful colors, the music, the costumes, like immediately you're transported into the second age of Middle Earth. Like, how did I get here? I don't know. Let's find out what's going on. I think it's a fantastic concept to use Tolkien called it the appendix, which sort of mapped out in broad strokes what we're seeing now. I mean, if you were going to go anywhere with the franchise, this makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's super exciting and intriguing. So, I mean, we're coming as appreciators of it, but we do have this lens of race. And I want to talk about at least one more character, the queen in the human realm of Numenor.
Numenor, yes. This really interesting island that has this kind of, it's divided. It's kind of like our country. It's divided. There are pro-elves and anti-elves. And apparently the pro-elf king was recently deposed.
Right.
So it is this kind of, oh, that sounds like, I hope that's not a representation of some other former leader. So anyway, this divided country, and then the queen is black, and she is the anti-elf. And in this story, the elves are the heroes, right? Right. I think so far I have not seen an evil elf at all. Maybe elves that are political, right? Yes. But overall, the elves seem to be the saviors of the story. And so to have a black queen who's anti-elf and possibly scheming this last, you know, she was talking to someone saying, the elf has arrived, like dun, dun, dun. meaning she doesn't like elves, right? And whoever she's talking to, you know, there's all these shadowy figures that lead you. You're like, who is that shadow? Who's that figure in the shadows? I want to know, right? It's always someone evil.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. It's like, yeah, it rubs me the wrong way that, you know, when we have the one mixed Asian kid, Theo, who is the heir apparent to Sauron, and then a black human queen, right, who is anti-elf. It's like, you know, we just
are they falling back into the trope of, yes, they can only be the sort of evil.
You're worried. I'm worried because you character. Cannot help but worry because we're so used to that kind of story.
The other thing I'm worried about is killing off characters, yes, of color, right? We, yes, know some, yes, folks, yes, are gonna die. So I don't, how long is Aaron Deer gonna last? I'm just saying.
No, he better last till last of the season. If he's
gotta last,
because he is really the only lead of color. Everybody else, like even the queen, the queen and the princess of the dwarves, right? They're both like, they appear and then, but they're not on every episode. You're, right, not following their adventure. Right. You're following Arondir's adventure, and, right, you're following Galadriel's adventure, right? Right. And now the human love interest of Galadriel. What is he?
Oh, that the dude.
The dude. I can't even find him. Who is he? Anyway, the apparently the king, right? King of the Southlands, folks. Right? Oh, Southlander. He must be under Southlanders. Yeah. He is. Hellbrand. He is a low man of the, I don't, they just like a randomly put that. Is that like Netherlands, like lowlands or like, I don't know.
Yeah, like South Carolina, you know, low country.
You know, when they have these terms, they are European in like,
that would make sense.
Origin.
Sure.
And so that makes maybe sense that like people Scottish. Are like, we want our white, but you know, Europe isn't even white.
Come on now.
I mean, right? We have
shake them up too much.
Europe is not white. Europe is diverse as well, right? And so I think we need to not associate certain, you know, certain countries or certain origins with only certain races.
Yeah.
And
look, Tolkien wrote this, I want to say in the 40s, like around World War II. there's a lot that's happened since then. There's a lot of awareness that most of the people of color have brought to this, to the screen, to our society and culture. So the point being, if he wrote this, you know, more than half a century ago, can the story evolve in terms of how we portray characters, right?
That's right.
We don't have to remain like ossified in this one era of human history, because this is where, again, sort of the real world impacts the fantasy world. Like, he's in Europe writing as a white man. Obviously, his networks are pretty homogenous, right? Yeah. So does that always have to be the case? Is part of the problem. So,
and this is fantasy.
This is fantasy.
And this representation through film and television, that could be someone else's vision. I think about Bridgerton.
Uh-huh.
Right, with Shonda Rhimes, yeah, right? We have, yeah, a black female creator who is taking this kind of beloved Jane Austenian, you know, very kind of, I think, traditionally white as well, because it took place in England during a certain era. But this reimagining has blown up. People love it.
Yes.
People love, yes, you know, Regé Jean Page. I mean,
listen,
I only watched for him. No, I mean, it was a great, but I could not stop. I watched because I was curious, and then I could not stop,
right,
watching,
right,
because he is probably the most beautiful person I've ever seen on screen. Actually, I really like Ismael as well. I mean, I'm watching this, I'm like, this is an elf that I could, like, you know, really get behind, yeah, because Galadriel, I've seen that already. That's the thing. There's also this newness and freshness that people of color bring to kind of a visualization that's like, so there's some people that are like, oh, we want tradition, we don't want things to change. But I'm one of like, I don't want to see the same old thing. Like, Succession is popular. Mm. I've seen a few episodes. I'm like, I'm not interested in the story. You know, I want is, I've watched rich white people all of my life in some capacity, right? I feel like I woke up with, what was that reality show? It was like something of rich and lives of the rich and famous
yeah,
or something.
Of the rich and
yeah,
famous.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like champagne dreams and caviar something.
Wishes,
yeah. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh my God. I've grown up with this fantasy or this ideal, right? And it's not a reality for me, you know?
Right, right.
And also I don't feel comfortable around people like that because they usually don't like me because they're, you know, they might be racist. And so all of that, like to say that I think I love fantasy. I grew up reading so much fantasy, so much sci-fi, because I wanted to dream that there could be a different world than the one that I'm living in.
And now we actually have the opportunity to help build that world. And as people, as consumers of this show, you know, asking for it, right? And I wonder with the backlash that we've seen, because it seems so... you know, contrived almost. Like, I wonder how much of this is genuine outrage. Like, to your point, it is, it kind of holds a sacred place in the memories of a lot of people. So they don't want to mess with that. But I also think there are some dudes just sitting on their laptop being like, let me type this. I know this is going to tick them off, you know, and just kind of want to throw a grenade in or throw some red meat out just to kind of stir up.
Well, it's kind of like the anti-CRT movement. People don't really know what that is, but just the suggestion of some people might not have even seen the series, but the suggestion that it's woke. And then they see the advertisement or they see one episode, you know, with the one black elf, then they're like, oh, well, elves are only white in our minds. And they don't necessarily actually watch and see that. Hey, majority of the elves are blonde.
Right.
You get exactly what you want. There's no deviation from your fantasy.
You're still kings of the castle and queens
that's
of the
right,
castle.
That's right. Yeah. You're going to feel good. This series is going to make you feel absolutely included and that you belong.
Color out to fight for you. You know, whatever.
That's right. It totally fits into, I think,
it's actually
the hierarchy. Not disruptive, but still like hopeful.
One is too much.
For,
yeah.
That's right. But for us, it's like when there was none, yes, we celebrate, but we don't want to celebrate to the point where it's like, this is it.
Right.
Because
right,
this is
right,
not it.
Right. It's not it. And I think like the folks who are really trying to make a big deal about having any people of color here, right? Like one, I bet they still watching. Like, or they're not. Because even from a business standpoint, I think you stand to gain a lot more than you have to lose. Like if for some reason, you know, writers, producers are hearing the trolls, this is a no-brainer. Because your options are make the show white and maybe even whiter by either adding more characters or killing off characters of color.
Yes, which was what we're fearful
yeah,
of.
We don't want that.
Don't kill any of the characters of color off. Amazon, please don't kill any of them off. And please develop Theo, not just purely evil.
That's good. The other alternative is you actually lean into this and say, you know what? It is a sci-fi fantasy world. We can create within sort of the Tolkien world, we have a lot of actual latitude and ability to branch out. And then what that does is it brings in people like us who said, okay, I can see myself represented in a nuanced way through multiple relationships, multiple roles, good dialogue, all of that stuff. You will bring in far more people than who walk away because the show got too woke. Come on. I'm just saying, from you want the you're gonna spend $1 billion on a series, you want as many viewers as you want, and I'm just saying that the way to go is not to listen to the trolls who are crying out the show is woke, and you might lose a handful of those people, but what you stand to gain is this brand new audience who never thought Lord of the Rings was for them, and now it is.
Yes, and there's so many people of color that I know that love Lord of the Rings. Yeah. We watched even though it was all white.
We ride or die.
Yes, but I think so far, you know, I'm excited to see people of color. I want to see more women of color represented in more primary roles, and I think that there's room for that. And yeah, because there's so many more stories to be told, right, in this world.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And just bringing in people that we haven't seen before, because there is that freshness. I still believe in that, yes. You know, that freshness. And I also think about, like, you know, there's fantasies in other cultures, right? Like because right now with Netflix and with Amazon, you have access to dramas from other countries. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Taiwan with so much fantasy. There's so many, actually thousands. Talking about Tolkien being, you know, thinking about Middle Earth, there are thousands of years of ancient history in Asia alone, right? I was recently watching, Thor, Love and Thunder, you know, yeah. All the Marvels are all fantasy, right? He went to this God council, and there was this Bao, Lord of Dumplings, you know, a God of Dumplings. Hilarious, right? Hilarious. But is that how you only see Asians as our food? Because, like, there are over, I think I looked up 200 million gods in just Hinduism alone.
Wow.
Millions of gods. And so if we're going to invoke the fantasy world, there is so much in Asia, because these are old ancient cultures.
They got a lot to draw from. Yeah.
So, and same thing with, you know, the continent of Africa, and same thing with all the indigenous, you know, Pacific Islander, and out there, we have a lot of myths. And so fantasy doesn't just belong to Europeans, right?
Gracious.
And I'm not saying fantasy, like religion isn't fantasy, but but there are, a lot of this is also coming out of religion, right? We know Tolkien is coming out of Christianity, but a lot of even the Marvel comic, you know, cinematic universe, a lot of those Greek gods, those were gods that were worshipped at one point, right? So if we're going to do more fantasy, let's expand that fantasy, especially since we're kind of done. I think we've done and overdone the European myths.
Yeah, because now we're recycling.
We totally are recycling, right? And so there are other cultures.
And it's such a great point to make in the era of streaming, because there's so much more content that needs to be generated. Well, now it's time to expand and tell stories from other people groups, other cultures, other traditions. So again, it only makes business sense if that's the only thing that's going to persuade you, and not the moral and ethical implications of all of this. You have such a vast array of source material that you can draw on when you branch out beyond the US and beyond Europe. So we're only 3 episodes in, and we've already got this much to talk about. I cannot wait to see how this series evolves. I'm glued to the TV every week when the new episode drops, and hopefully we'll keep talking about it.
Yes, I'm excited.
All right. We'll see y'all perhaps next week with a new episode drop.
This episode is brought to you in part by Ministry Pivot with Russell St. Bernard. This podcast features important conversations with industry leaders such as Nona Jones, Bishop Walter Scott Thomas, Reverend Dr. Nicole Martin, and so many more. Visit ministrypivot.com or on all streaming platforms.